Well, Jesse, just like the Blue Jays drew it up, right? That's how it goes. They don't like or maybe know how to do things the easy way, but hey, they needed every single last one of those runs they scored today to hang on a Dalton Varsho grand salami into the visiting bullpen. They bat around in that inning. They give Berríos some well-deserved run support. And, hey, a stressful way to end this ball game, albeit all's well that ends well type of way to end the series on Father's Day, no less. 7-6, the Blue Jays take the game. They take the series from the Guardians, and now they are 35-36 on the year. Just one game, once again, just one game below 500.
Yeah, we'll see what's up with Jimmy Garcia. I'm sure we'll hear some comments from John Schneider with an update on him after when he meets with the media. But a really encouraging performance from the Toronto Blue Jays. This is a really good Cleveland Guardians team, and I think you saw, even in this game, a lot of the things that the Cleveland Guardians do really well. A lot of bat-to-ball contact, like Stephen Kwan again. Guy's gonna hit 400 this year. He's batting .398 on the season. And it just felt like in the ninth inning, there was a ton of hard contact on Jimmy Garcia before he left due to injury. But, man, there's a lot to be really encouraged about if you're the Toronto Blue Jays. We discussed in the pregame show how the home runs just haven't been there for this squad. And then you see in the first inning, Blue Jays load the bases, and they get nothing from it. And you're starting to think to yourself, uh-oh, here we go, all over again. It's going to be the same old story today where the Blue Jays can't cash guys in when they're there. And yet Dalton Varsho comes up with a massive swing, and that's the type of swing that you need. I mean, I know grand slams don't come around all that often, but you do need the two-run, the three-run, and sometimes mix in a grand slam. And it goes a really long way because the Blue Jays needed every single run they could get today against the Guardians.
That is Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Adley. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming live on sportsnet.ca on the Sportsnet app as well. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line, and it is always open. Yeah, the offense, I got to say, when in the bottom of the first inning, loading the bases, Jesse, no outs, like you said, they get no runs whatsoever, and all I could think of was, you've seen those memes where it's like, if you don't like that, you don't like Blue Jays baseball. And all I could think of was, gosh, maybe I don't like this. Maybe I would prefer not to see this. And you know what? You got some interesting plays from the offense in terms of swing decisions and certainly base running plays in the second inning. You get a 108-mile-an-hour hit from Addison Barger. I mean, he rips that thing into right field. Ernie Clement turns on one. And to your point, you had said this in the pregame show, but there is a lot of importance to not only getting the slap singles from a lot of these guys, but working in some power into the many singles and walks the Blue Jays certainly earn. Mm-hmm. But it was great to see that in the fifth inning. Because, like, yes, Dalton Varsho hit the grand slam. Great to see. Vladdy basically murdered a baseball to dead center that is essentially going to be the longest single you will maybe ever see in your life, because I thought that was gone. Got to say, I thought it was a home run, and it was he maybe missed that from being home run by what? Maybe inches?
Well, like, it was the furthest in terms of distance, man, of any ball hit today, further than the grand slam, further than Erling Komet's home run, the Guardians home runs. It was 401 to center field, and all it was a single in the end.
Just demolishing that baseball. But this is what we got in the fifth inning. We got walk, walk, Vladdy single, grand slam, walk, walk, RBI single. Mm-hmm. That is great stuff. And you want to see that continue. And honestly, I don't think it's a huge coincidence that amidst a lot of that, you see a lot of the Buffalo guys, right? That you see Ernie Clement, that you see Spencer Horwitz, that Davis Schneider is involved, that Addison Barger is playing well now that he's being called up. And now I'm not putting it all on the four of them, certainly. I mean, Vladdy and Varsho, a lot of these guys had good plays today. And Vladdy had a great day today, good heavens. But, you know, it's nice to see some of the roster moves they made in the last, because the lineups have been all over the place recently. It's nice to see them paying some immediate dividends, because they're trying to get every last ounce of offense basically anywhere they can.
Yeah, you saw Barger with a stolen base, and you think back to what John Schneider had to say when Daniel Vogelbach was sent down, and he said, look, we have the ability here to use some of these guys in different ways than Daniel Vogelbach, who's a little bit more one-dimensional, and these guys do bring a different element. Sometimes it's power, sometimes it's contact. You saw Barger, you talked about it, absolutely destroyed that single 108 miles an hour. Like, there are things that these guys bring to the lineup. David Schneider, over his time in a year and a half of being on the Blue Jays, it's been really, there's power there, which they needed. Maybe it hasn't been to the extent that, that Blue Jays fans would want this year, but it's nice to have them all sort of bring a different element and a different look for a team that is really searching to find more consistency when it comes to scoring runs. And today they were a massive part of it. You can, again, you hope that they can find a way to carry it through and establish a little bit of momentum, because again, this is a really good team that they just beat. And I think when you're looking for little things, you look for the belief. Like, is there the belief there that you can beat good baseball teams? And coming off of this weekend, I think there's a lot to be pretty excited about if you're inside that clubhouse. Another opportunity to get back to 500 again tomorrow.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We'll go to the text line in a sec, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line, and as you guys know, it's always open. But first, let's go to the phones. Eddie in Fort Erie joining us here on Jays Talk. Eddie, what's up?
Not much, Joe and Jesse. First of all, I want to say Happy Father's Day to you guys and all the listeners that are listening right now.
Yeah, thanks, Eddie. Happy Father's Day to you as well.
Thank you. Now, two things I want to share. First of all, the fact that Dalton Varsho hit a grand slam today is so appropriate because, you know, he's a second-generation ball player. And I think for most of those guys on the Blue Jays, like Bo and Vladdy and Varsho, playing on Father's Day as a second-generation player must feel like one of the best days because, you know, they came up through the system and, you know, going to the clubhouses with their dads and, you know, everything else like that and playing on Father's Day. I mean, that's got to feel like really, really good. And hitting the grand slam was just as – was even better, you know? Now, the other thing I want to talk about was Garcia leaving, gentlemen, on a serious note. It just shows you why the Blue Jays didn't address their pitching staff, not just with their hitting, because of how older that they got. It's almost like sometimes, gentlemen, that I'm watching the 17 – Blue Jays, where they brought everybody back and didn't address their pitching staff. You know what I mean? It just frustrates me. And plus, the more that I see Rodriguez, it's like, why did they even sign this guy who hasn't even pitched all year, you know? It just frustrates the heck out of me, you know that?
But what, but so what's the issue with Y-Rod specifically, Eddie?
Because he hadn't pitched all year. Remember, he took that year off?
Right.
And it's like, yeah, so that's what I wasn't a fan of, why they brought somebody who hadn't played all year, and now
I see
he's
what you mean.
Yes.
Okay. But I mean, he has played generally well when he's been healthy.
I know, but it just frustrates me, you know what I mean? Like they're trying to build him back up in a situation where we have to win some games to stay in the hunt, because if not, then the window shrinks and shrinks, and then you know the rest, you know?
Hey, Eddie, appreciate the call, man. Thanks for joining us on Jays Talk as usual. So certainly a lot to get to there. I don't doubt that Gary Varsho, I don't know if he was here or maybe he was watching at home, wherever he was. I don't doubt that he was very happy to watch his son absolutely annihilate a baseball on Father's Day. That's super cool. Gary Varsho, Gary Varsho has actually been on with Blair and Barker on their show a whole bunch of times, actually. More than maybe two or three times even, including this season. And I've always enjoyed hearing him talk because he's a ball player. You hear him talk about the minutia of hitting with Barker. I really like that kind of stuff. So if you haven't heard those conversations, I highly recommend it on the Blair and Barker podcast feed. So I am certain he was thrilled. I am certain Ernie Clement, who, if you're listening to the radio feed of the game, Ernie Clement was Ben and Caleb's guest post game, and he did get a Gatorade bath from Vladdy during his radio interview. I was a little concerned for him because he was wearing electrical headsets, but he seemed to be okay. But Ernie Clement also talking about his dad, who I don't think is a major leaguer, but certainly it's really cool when you get to share in those moments
for
with
sure.
people with whom it means a lot to you. You know, on Jimmy Garcia, we did get a quick update. This is from the Blue Jays beat. John Schneider talking to the media right now. Experienced right elbow soreness during his outing. That's per Schneider, and he also says we'll see how he is and no more later today or tomorrow.
That's not good.
So that's never great, right?
No, because you'd rather a back or a twisted leg or something.
Yeah, because
right elbow is not good.
The litany of injuries to pitchers you've seen throughout this season has. You know, I don't want to be sound like a doomer, but, you know, you typically have not boded super well. So let's hope for the best for Jimmy. And hopefully we'll know more tomorrow when the Red Sox are in town. But let's put it this way, Jesse. If you had to reorder the bullpen because Jimmy Garcia is now unavailable for a period of time, I'm curious how that goes, because they're lucky they have Chad Green. It's a good thing Chad Green came off the IL and has largely been pretty good. So Chad Green, as long as Romano's on the IL, Chad Green would certainly be the team's, like, quote-unquote closer, right? But it essentially means you can't use him. It was one of the things I liked about having Green and Garcia, or Green and Romano, or Garcia and Romano, whatever the pairing was, was that one guy could go in the ninth, and then the other guy, could, whoever it is, could be the fireman whenever the biggest pocket of batters was coming up, essentially, right? And they had been doing that with Romano and Jimmy, and then certainly with Jimmy and Green, and now we'll see Green and question mark, I suppose. But if you don't have a super high leverage reliever, it does mean you obviously can't use Green in the flexible role you had been using him in, and all of a sudden this team doesn't have a lot of high leverage relievers. They have a lot of like medium leverage relievers, and maybe it is a chance for someone like a Zach Pop or Trevor Richards is pretty trusted, but as long as that fifth spot is a bit of a question mark,
he's going to be used
in that spot too. So there's a lot of question marks about the bullpen. They do admittedly need Jordan Romano back in the worst way, and given that Romano's injury, I mean, it was the inflamed elbow, and that was the same thing he had dealt with in the spring. And that injury took him about, what, like 3.5 weeks for him to return from. So we're like nearing that point. I think he's been on the IL for a good chunk of time, so maybe it won't be too much longer. But it does raise a question mark over the bullpen status, a unit that has unfortunately been a little beleaguered this year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, these are some serious injuries to pitchers. You never want to hear elbow inflammation or elbow issues with the pitching arm, and those are important guys. Having Romano be out for as extended of a period as he's been out for, and now Jimmy Garcia, you wonder how they're going to be able to absorb that. And I think the reality is Chad Green probably becomes your closer effectively, and then it's just matchups the rest of the way through. You don't have any other guy that at this point you trust so much that you're willing to say, okay, this is my eighth inning person, this is my seventh inning person. It's going to just be matchup based for John Schneider. That it becomes a little bit more difficult, but this is an opportunity for some guys that have struggled to a pretty serious degree, some of them in the bullpen this season. This is a really good opportunity for them to step up and say, hey, you know, I deserve a shot at higher leverage. You saw Nate Pearson was the one who came on in this situation to try and close things out with a 1-0 count, two outs, and he was the one who ended up getting the final out. So a good job by him, and maybe he factors in to some higher leverage stuff. It hasn't necessarily always gone great for Nate Pearson in high leverage, so that's why I think Chad Green would be the highest of leverage at this point. But, man, you need those bullpen arms to get healthy, because for a bullpen that struggled as much as they have this season, you need every guy that you can trust to be healthy and available, and it's been tough so far for the Jays.
You know, from a bullpen perspective, I mean, yesterday was obviously great. They used six relievers, and they got the 5-0 win. Today, a much closer game. I got to say, and I'm not saying this guy we're going to talk about is necessarily the answer to what ails the Blue Jays bullpen right now, especially if something is seriously wrong with Jimmy Garcia. And again, you cross your fingers and hope that's not the case. But Brendan Little, I have been pleasantly surprised from what they had gotten, even prior to today, what they had gotten from Little recently, to the point where even if I did admittedly raise my eyebrows when they brought in Little after
Chad leverage,
Green.
Yeah.
That, like, easily the highest leverage spot of his entire career, almost certainly, because he hasn't played that many innings in Major League Baseball. But still, I wasn't actually surprised that he had played that well, because he has played well for the Blue Jays for large chunks of the year, albeit he had come in when the team was trailing, for example. But still, he used the sinker pretty effectively today. He used the sinker in all three outs. You got Jimenez on a ground out, Naylor on a strikeout, Fry, who was a pinch hitter, on a fly out. So three different ways he got outs. Great stuff. It's encouraging to see that, I think, certainly from any young guy, but it's also encouraging, Jesse, to see that, I think, from a lefty reliever, when you kind of know that Tim Mayza has been a little, you know, in a certainly more rough spots than you'd like from someone like Tim Mazur, who's been on the team for a long time, especially at this point in the season. And Daniele and I spoke about this yesterday, but I do genuinely wonder, and this was more of the case before Jimmy Garcia, you know, if there's an IL stint, it would change the calculus here a little bit, but it made me wonder if they'd consider keeping little over Meza when they had to make any sort of roster move, right? Like if it had to be Weyrod coming back probably by the next turn of the rotation, Romano coming back, or even when Swanson eventually returns, like someone's got to go down, right, to make room on the active roster. And he, like, I think conventional thought would say it's Brendan Little, and it might still be Brendan Little, but if he can build on what he has shown, and not just today but in the last couple of outings for him, I think that he might have a chance to force the team's hand in keeping him in the majors at this point.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent point, Cho, because you're kind of searching for guys to give you a little bit of consistency. Like, that's the big thing. You can't have the big innings where Tim Meza comes in, he allows three runs, and then the game is over. Like, you can't have those innings anymore, so you look for guys who can give you scoreless outings, and Brendan Little, including today, that's five straight outings where he hasn't allowed a run. And that's pretty darn good. So you're searching for any arm that you could possibly use in decently high leverage. And I think the reason they used him where they used him today is because you look at his last 2 weeks or so, and he's been pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And you sort of ride that momentum. You ride what he's been able to do over the last couple of weeks. And anyone you can trust, I don't want to say he's in the quote-unquote circle of trust yet, but I don't even know that the Blue Jays have a circle of trust at this point because of the injuries after Jimmy Garcia.
It's just Chad Green right now.
Seriously, who else is there?
Yeah, it's tough.
So it's a tough situation for the Blue Jays to have to navigate, but maybe they caught lightning in a bottle a little bit here with Brendan Little, and you could just use him for as long as this hot run is going to go.
I see a text here from Jen in Toronto, very impressed with Little. Does he deserve a spot over Meza? Does Meza have options? I don't think Meza has options. I think you'd have to DFA him if you're sending Meza down. Like, I mean, you know that sometimes there's that odd period where like a guy's a little bit older, but he does have like one option remaining, for example. I don't think that's the case with Meza, but he probably would have to be DFA'd. Now again, is that the question? Is that what you want to do? Probably not. But I mean, if Little again, I don't think the question has been settled now, even if he did pitch very well against three tough guys.
Yeah.
But if he continues pitching this way, you can change that. I see a couple other texts here, Jesse. You know what? I see a couple of texts here on Springer. Jen also talking about fun games. Springer is costing team runners in scoring position. Austin from Mineola. Can't have Springer Kirk batting 5 and 6. They're killing rallies. I think this is Don from BC. Says, got to get rid of both Springer and Kirk. So, like, a lot of, you know, despite the win, a lot of people still wanting some changes to the lineup. The only problem really is that I'm not sure who else you can really play over Springer and Kirk. I suppose what you could have done today, in theory, just spitballing here, because Springer DH'd today, I suppose you could have DH'd Danny Jansen, and then and Barger would have still been in right field because that's where he played today anyway. So I suppose that is an option, but I don't know, even Danny Jansen's kind of cooled off in the last like month or so or thereabouts, right? So it's just there are not a lot of obvious options. But I do agree that if you're constructing a batting order, I mean, pretty much all the Buffalo guys have been hitting a lot better than, well, Kirk has been sneakily fine. Like, he's been like around 100 WRC plus. I don't know what it is right now after today's game, but entering play today, he had been over the last month a guy around league average or a little bit above league average. But yeah. You know, Springer is tough right now, for sure.
I think in the bottom, it was the bottom of the third when he hit into that double play, and you started to hear some of the boo birds come out towards George Springer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And look, this is a guy who's accomplished so much in his Major League Baseball career that you want to afford him the opportunity to dig his way out of it. But unfortunately, given where the Blue Jays have played themselves into at this point of the season, I just don't know how much you can play him, you know, with any kind of regularity. I don't think at this stage he belongs in the lineup every single day with a day off here or there. Like, I think he, at this point, until he shows signs of coming out of it, which he might not at his age, like, this is a realistic possibility that we have seen, you know, the baseline of George Springer, and he is going to be a 220, 230 hitter for the duration of his career. Does he provide you good offense? Yeah, but right now he's batting under 200. And it's not a small sample size anymore. We're in the middle of June, and you are a game under 500 and trying to chase a third wild card spot down. And if it's the four Buffalo guys that give you the best opportunity, and those are the ones that have, I know you're paying George Springer a lot of money, and I know that contract's not going to look good, so you think that you have to play him, but you have to make a decision here. Are you trying to win games, or do you not want the contract to look bad?
Yeah.
Because having that in your lineup, the under 200, day in, day out, you're sacrificing offense there, and that's what this team needs. So it's a tough call to make, but at some point you got to make it. And he doesn't belong in the lineup if he's going to hit under 200.
I will say, on a positive note, I did enjoy watching basically all the Buffalo guys. The Buffalo, what are we calling them? Is there like a name? Is
the Buffalo Boys.
The Buffalo Boys. That seems like a pretty simple.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
You know, the crew. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
The herd. Whatever.
The Bison Boys. Yeah. The Buffalo Boys. Whatever you want to call them.
They have all been playing really well. I gotta say, Spencer Horwitz, and I think we kind of know what David Schneider is at this point. We're approaching a year because he got his promotion in August of 2023. You know, I think Spencer Horwitz and Addison Barger have been, for me, so much fun to watch. Ernie Clement certainly as well, because I remember when he made the team out of spring, and I thought to myself, like, he was like jacking home runs off of, like, I don't know, like Zach Eflin and Corbin Burns and guys like that. And again, it's the spring; it is what it is. But I remember thinking, like, that guy's a major leaguer, and he had a bit of a rough stretch, maybe about what, 3 weeks ago thereabouts. But he's been playing very well, as evidenced by the home run today. He makes some good plays on defense as well. But Horwitz and Barger, obviously as the most recent two guys to get called up, they look like they belong, don't they? Like,
yeah.
And I don't even only mean offensively. And I think we're going to continue to see more from Barger. I mean, gosh, that guy is yoked. And he can hit the ball incredibly hard.
His arms are massive.
we
talked about wild. Bryson DeChambeau earlier today. Like, this guy, he kind of looks like him.
Yeah, I need the Addison Barger workout routine. Not that I would necessarily follow it or benefit from it, but I still would like to see what it is.
I remember earlier in the season, John Schneider was asked what's different about Addison Barger this year, and he said his arms.
I do remember that,
biceps.
Actually. I do remember that. Well, here's the thing. He looks, not only does he look good at the plate, and it's a small sample size, so you need to see him continue it before you feel really confident in him.
Yeah.
But he looks good in right field. He has a cannon for an arm. We didn't get to see him show it off too many times today in right field. But yesterday when he was at third base, he made a lot of really laser-like throws across the diamond look pretty easy. Some good back picks and kind of just balls that looked like they would be handled awkwardly by others. He made them look pretty smoothly. So that's good to see. Spencer Horwitz, though, I got to say, I mean, we know what he is, I think, offensively. He gets on base a lot. I think he's had nine hits through since getting called up, certainly. So all he does is get on base, which is phenomenal. Obviously, it's what you want from your leadoff hitter or a guy hitting at or near the top of the order, Jesse. But there was a play in this game where I think it was the bottom of the seventh inning, and the ball, Chad Green's on the mound, and the ball comes right to him just to the right of the second base bag. And he snatches the ball, quickly steps on the bag. I think it was Stephen Kwan who was trying to, and he's a pretty speedy guy, who was trying to steal second. He still got to the bag before Kwan, stepped on the bag, and lasered the throat of Vladdy and basically turns the 4-3 double play. I thought that was phenomenal stuff. And for a guy who not that long ago started playing second base, he looks very comfortable there.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's a huge thing that almost all of these guys have so much positional versatility. Like, the fact that, you know, when a team's searching for offense the way that they are, when you can put these guys different spots around the diamond, that makes it so much easier to get them into the lineup.
Yeah.
And that's what you need. Like, Spencer Horwitz being in the leadoff spot today, what is his reputation? This guy's reputation is not so much on the defensive end, but offensively, getting on base. What is the responsibility of a leadoff hitter? It's to get on base, make contact. He saw it with Stephen Kwan today. Again, guys batting .398 this season. So it's a good example of what you want out of your leadoff hitter. David Schneider, did an adequate job in that spot for a long time. But is he best served in that spot? He's more of a fly ball type of guy. If a guy like Spencer Horwitz can have the same level or around the same level, as I don't know if it's fair to say just do what you did in the minors at the major league level.
That's fair.
But if you can have some modicum of the same success that you had at the minor league level, that is exactly what you're looking for out of a leadoff guy. And then it presents more opportunities for guys like Vladdy, et cetera, down the lineup to cash more RBI, which is what you've been wanting. You just need more runs any way you can do it. And these guys afford the Blue Jays a ton of versatility in different ways to get their bats in the lineup.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We'll go back to the text line in a second here, 590-590, name and location. But let's go to the phones. Let's go to Adam in Thornhill. Adam, what's up? What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. Happy Father's Day.
Yeah.
I'm going to go contrarian here. I believe that this organization must sign Bo and Vladdy both to long-term deals, and I'm gonna sell it to you, or at least I'm gonna try to sell it to you. First of all, Vladdy just turned 25 years old, like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Bo just turned 26. Okay. They have not yet hit their prime. We know from data, prime years are 27 to 32. Second of all, Vladdy never played first base in his life up until the truncated season in 2020. And within a year and a half, he won a gold glove. And he's become a very, very reliable defensive first baseman. The power will come. You can see the hard hit rate. Thirdly, my proposal is to give them career contracts. We're talking 12, 13, 14 years. Now, I know a lot of people are going to go, whoa, that's crazy. But just hear me out. If you can do that and give them the money and lower the AAV, you don't have much long-term exposure on the books. After next year, when they become free agents, you're only going to have 1 year of Springer, 1 year of Gausman, and a couple of years of Berrios. That's not a lot of money on the books. Thirdly, you have nothing to replace them with. Fourthly, even if we want to say, even if you sign Guerrero, let's say, to a 14-year deal, which seems insane to people, if he gives you, for 10 of the 14 years, say an average of 25 home runs, 80 RBIs, and 150 hits, which is nothing impressive, and it would be considered a failure of the contract, he's still projected to finish his career with like 400 home runs and 2,500 hits. That's a Hall of Famer. If he gives you anything that's reminiscent of that 21 season, multiple years, wins a gold glove here and there, or if he can extend beyond that 10 years and, let's say, be a DH at the back end of it. Okay, let's say he's not Ortiz or Cruz, but he's, say, Torrey Hunter. Any additional numbers, you're talking about a slam dunk Hall of Famer. So I just don't think we really appreciate what we have. Now, just one last thing on Bo. He's played poorly for 2 months. He led the league in hits last year. The back of the baseball card tells you the story for 5 years. So now we're going to be concerned with 2 months of Bo not playing well. But we're going to throw bouquets at, and I'm not trying to pick on him because I like him, but we're going to throw bouquets at Davis Schneider, who's had 4 months of Major League Baseball, sitting 235, 240, and half the stadium are wearing Groucho Marx mustaches to honor him. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Adam, thanks for
the call,
man. That's a good one. Good. Lots of good stuff to think about from you. Just in case you're curious, Jesse, because I was curious when he said lock the guys up to super long-term deals. I was curious, like, what right now are the longest contracts that have been handed out, like, relatively speaking, recently. So Yoshinobu Yamamoto, it's a little different with pitchers, right? But Yamamoto was signed to a 12-year deal by the Dodgers. That was this past offseason. Julio Rodriguez was signed to a 13-year deal. He signed that, I think it was last year, not this past season, but last season, in 2023. That's a 13-year deal, $210 million. Will Smith, the Dodgers catcher, signed to a 10-year deal. Yeah. I didn't actually realize he was under contract for that long.
Signing a catcher with those knees exposed like that for 10 years?
You know what? Will Smith has been pretty elite, so I get it. And the Dodgers can afford to do things like that because they're the Dodgers. But 10 years for him. And Bobby Witt Jr., who did sign his deal, I think it was this season. I don't know if it was in the offseason or if it was right at the beginning of the year. But either way, Bobby Witt Jr. signed his deal for 11 years. Now, the difference, if you were only comparing Rodriguez and Witt, so J-Rod is 23 and Witt is 24. So I think it's probably unlikely they get signed to like you sign Bo or Vladdy to 13-year deals just because they're a little bit longer up there in eight. And it's up there is relative, right? I mean, they're not 23, but they're 25 and 26. But, I mean, I wouldn't hate them being signed to, like, dueling 10-year deals, for example. Like, right? I don't think that's the wrong thing. Having said that, would the player take 10-year deals, depending on what the number is? Like, I mean, Julio Rodriguez, $210 million. Bobby Witt Jr., they bought out some of his free agency years and Arb years as well, that deal. So $288 million. So it makes sense it's a little bit more. But, I mean, you're probably not signing Vladdy and Bo for, like, $300 million 10 years, right? It's going to be less than that, more than likely, right? Maybe, like, $210 to $240 million for Vladdy. And again, I think the difference with Bo is that he's played so poorly this season, but he's also a shortstop, and shortstops make a boatload of money.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if it's not the Blue Jays are going to pay him, someone's paying him
and
that
money. And
the
track record's there, too. Yeah, I wouldn't – I'm not going to crush Bo and Vladdy for their performance this season. I think, obviously, with Vladdy, you want to see more power. There's no question. And with Bo, you want to see the average tick higher, and he's not what he was the last couple of years. But the track record, again, is there. I think the big issue, though, with the long-term contracts is what is Vladdy going to want? What is Vladdy going to ask for? Is he going to ask for money as if he's the guy that we saw 3 years ago? Or is he going to be the guy that's going to end up hitting probably 20 home runs, 22 home runs, and 80 RBI
right.
this year? So I have a feeling that they potentially could be pretty far apart in terms of what Vladdy's asking for. And would the Blue Jays go to him and say, hey, look, this is what we value at because of the statistics that you put up the last couple of seasons, which don't merit a $200-plus million contract, right? Because you look at Vladdy, like, even today, really good game, hard-hit balls, but he's now gone 9 games without an RBI, it's career high. And you start to wonder, like, you know, if he's going to have 70, 80 RBI, like, is that the guy you want to tie to your organization for $200-plus million for over a decade?
But let me ask you this. Is that simply the going rate of having the very good complementary-type players? It might be, honestly.
It might be. And part of the issue, which was a really good point raised by Adam, they're what you're looking for. Like, even if you're not getting absolute maximum performance from Vladdy and Bo, guys in their prime at 25 and 26 years old,
yeah.
with the capability at the very least, one guy of hitting 40 home runs, yeah. another guy of hitting over 300 and having 70, 80, 90 RBI, like, that is what you build the team around. So that point is a very good one. I just think there's a possibility when you go into negotiations and, you know, Vladdy's side argues that, hey, Vladdy's the guy from 3 years ago. We expect him to get back to that. And the Blue Jays might counter and say, we don't think you're that guy anymore. And as a result, you might be really far apart. Like, do you want to tie your team to a guy that might not be what you thought he was going to be originally? And that's kind of the issue. We have to figure out what Vladimir Guerrero truly is.
I think the Julio Rodriguez comp will be interesting because, if I remember correctly, it was loaded with incentives.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely loaded with incentives. So if he meets certain benchmarks, you get paid a little more, and, you know, you can activate
the
options and so on.
Yeah,
I think that kind of contract might be the contract you do give to Vladdy. So even if it is $200 million or $220 million or whatever it is, whatever the going rate is for young players like that, it's a 10-year, $220 million deal to Vladdy. But a lot of it, especially in the back end of the deal, is tied up in incentives. That might be enough. Honestly, like,
yeah.
that might be enough if we think he's still going to be a first baseman and not a third baseman. Maybe it's a little less because of the positional, the maybe lack of positional versatility. And again, we have seen him play a little bit. Like, I'm really stretching the word of little bit here in terms of third base, because he hasn't done it that much even since they had the shocker when we were on a couple of weeks ago when he did it for the first time since his rookie year, essentially. So, I mean, if that becomes a bigger part of his game, maybe he does get paid more, but is that really going to change the value in the span of, like, 2 months versus what we've seen from him virtually his entire career? Probably not,
yeah.
I would say.
So you trade them, say, this year or next year, and Vladdy's Arbier and Bo's a UFA at 2026. So you trade these guys. What are you asking for? Like, you're essentially asking for players that you think will become Vladimir Guerrero and Bo Bichette. And the issue specifically with baseball prospects is that they don't hit as much as you think they do, or as often as you think they do. And even though Vladdy and Bo might not be what you thought they were going to be last year or 2 years ago or even 3 years ago, the guys that you would want back are no sure thing, ever. It's never a sure thing,
yep.
No matter who it is, no matter how blue-chip the prospect is. So the pressure would then be on to absolutely nail those trades. And I don't know, do you have the confidence in the front office to absolutely nail those trades and then replenish the farm system? And then you're just waiting for the next Vlad and Bo to come along. It just feels like at that point it would be a redundant move. These are two guys that absolutely you can build a winner around. It's just the rest of the roster. I mean, those guys are underperforming. You could argue this year for sure. But the rest of the roster needs to be a little bit more elevated if those guys are going to struggle a little bit more than you originally thought.
416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Those are the numbers for you to call if you want to drop us a line here on Jay's Talk. We're going to take a quick break. When we go back, we'll go back to the phones. We'll go back to the text line as well, 590-590, name and location. The Blue Jays winning a thriller, 7-6, the final score. They take the game. They take the series from the Guardians here on Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, certainly, to all of you dads and single parents out there. We appreciate you. 7-6, the final score. We're back after this. You're listening to Jay's Talk Show and Jesse with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of knew that when they both came up here. You know, there's going to be some off days for some guys to start at least. But I think if everyone's performing well, it's nice to get guys a little bit of a blow too. So hopefully they can keep it rolling. And, you know, you obviously look at performance too. So hopefully they can keep it rolling.
So that's John Schneider talking about the idea of dividing playing time with a lot of these guys getting called up and playing certainly very well.
Just play them all.
Maybe it's the eternal optimist in me, Jesse, but that I choose to read into what Schneider is saying, in that he is willing to bench George Springer if he has to and play the rest of the Buffalo Boys.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that at this point it's do whatever you can possibly do to win games. We haven't always seen that.
Yeah.
We had a couple days ago where David Schneider and Henry Clement were the two guys that had hits in a three-hit game, and they were benched the next day. I mean, it's sort of feels like a bit of a theme that if a guy has a good day at the plate, if you're a Buffalo Bison specifically, you end up sitting the next day. So maybe John Schneider's going to come around, and that won't be the case much longer, and you're going to put your nine best bats out there as much as you possibly can, because that's what this team needs. But, you know, a nice day today to see Dalton Varsho hit a grand slam, and it's the second home run by a Blue Jays cleanup hitter this season.
Yeah.
That is an absurd stat. It's the fewest in baseball. Second home run out of the cleanup spot in the entire season. So maybe things are coming around a little bit offensively.
That is Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. We're here for another couple of minutes taking your calls and your texts. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Pete in Niagara Falls joining us here on Jay's Talk. Pete, what's up?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
I'll just
how are you?
Say what I want to say, and then you guys can comment on it.
Sure.
I've been listening to you guys since 88, and I've been a Blue Jay fan ever since I was a little tyke watching that black and white in 77,
wow.
The first game. So, guys, I think that Bo and Vladdy, in regards to their contracts, with the kind of offensive productivity they give and Bo's defense at short, I'd only offer Vladdy a five-year, say, $20 million a year contract as a max, and I'd offer Bo a five-year 20 if he would go and play second base, because I don't think he's a big league caliber shortstop. Doesn't have the arm and doesn't have the range. Those are the two biggest things, and honestly, I don't really think that they have a contender that's going to do anything in the playoffs. If it was me, I'd move Kiermaier for a prospect. I'd move Turner out. I'd put the kids in. I'd put the kids in and let the kids play. Honestly, I think that's what would make them a winner down the road. But this team isn't going to really contend for anything. They're going to sit around 500, tease us a little bit. But and the other point I have is if you're building a winner, the way I look at it, you want to build your winner right up the middle. Big investments in first baseman. I figure you can find a first baseman who can play first base and knock you in 80, 90 RBIs. But you want an absolute stud like Seager or somebody like that at shortstop. They can play that position. You want a stud in center field, which they have in Varsho, but it doesn't hit with a lick. Sorry about the grand slam, but still too much swing and miss in his swing. I'd say they have to break it down and rebuild it. Adkins and Shapiro made a mess of everything. They had a team 2-3 years ago that was one or two pitchers away from being a World Series contender, and they traded them all away. Look at where Moreno wound up. Look at Gurriel. Look at Teoscar. Those guys shouldn't have been taken away from this team. They were only a few players away. I'll leave you guys to comment on that, but I enjoy listening to your show every day, whenever you're on. Take care, guys. Bye now.
Hey, Pete, appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Pete.
Thanks for calling us. Okay, so a lot there, certainly. So from a retooling perspective, Jesse, I don't think you're going to get a prospect that is meaningful enough to help you rebuild. And I don't think Pete meant it like this, but you're not going to get, like, the next, you know, Gunnar Henderson because you're trading away Kikuchi and Garcia and Danny Jansen and Kiermaier. You know what I mean?
You're not going to get a top prospect.
Yeah, like you'll probably get something, but it just feels like you're not going to get you'll get the kind of prospect that Biggio was traded for. And even Biggio probably has a teensy bit more value because he's a little younger and he's making a little bit more money and he can play all these different positions. But you're probably not going to be trading any of those guys with the team being where they are. I mean, they're only one game under 500 at this point, right? And I mean, by the end of the Red Sox series, they could very well be over 500 yeah. for all we know. It starts tomorrow. From the contract perspective, though, okay. So I might be misremembering. I know he just said it, but I might be misremembering what Pete said. But I think he said $25 million a year for 5 years for Vladdy, which I think works out to $100 million contract.
And twenty for five for Bo,
yeah, right? So a little bit, or that'd be 125. Pardon me, and 100 for Bo. So, if that's the case, then both those guys are being like, all right, see you later, Blue Jays. Yeah. We're testing free agency, yeah. right? Because I'll put it this way. I go back to Julio Rodriguez. Now, he's a little younger, so you probably would get a little bit less for Vladdy because you're buying less of his RBR's free agency years, as the Mariners did with Julio Rodriguez. So even if it ends up being like a 10-year, you know, $180 to $200 million deal, if you believe that that's the big enough difference between their ages to make the number smaller, that's probably where the ballpark is. But for Bo, because he plays shortstop, and I know a lot of people say what Pete said. I've heard this before, that he shouldn't play short; he should be a second baseman. I mean, the Blue Jays also have like just a bazillion second basemen.
Yeah,
right? I'm not sure you really need Bo to be the second baseman of the future for this team. And I do believe from what we've heard in the last couple of years that this team believes he is a shortstop long term, right? And I think for his own earning potential, because players' careers are short,
he wants to be a shortstop,
yeah. right? Yeah. I mean, think about it. I mean, Pete mentioned Corey Seager. Corey Seager making $35 million a year. Mm-hmm. Carlos Correa making $33 million a year. Francisco Lindor, and I mean, like, the Lindor deal, probably not the greatest deal of all time, but yeah. Lindor making $32.4 million from the Mets. Trey Turner just signed with the Phillies. He's making $27.2 million a year, so... You know, you look at some of the deals that were handed out recently. Obviously, Trey Turner was a guy who signed pretty recently with the Phillies, and he was the top shortstop on the market. Javi Baez, 6 years, $140 million, which I don't think has particularly aged all that well. And Dansby Swanson signed a 7-year, $177 million deal. So I think, like, that's... It's probably going to come in somewhere in there, right? It's probably going to come in somewhere between 5 to 7 years... at $140 to $180 million for Bo. That's probably what you're looking at from the Blue Jays, and maybe it's a little more if he goes to free agency.
Yeah, I think really what matters here is how they value themselves and how the Blue Jays value them. And if it's too far apart, you're going to have to come to that conclusion pretty quickly, and that's when you're going to have to effectively trade them. Because if Vladdy and Bo want to be paid premium money, and I understand that people will say, well... You know, there's no salary cap in baseball, so you can pay them as much as you want. But the fact remains that every team still has a budget. It's just within the constraints
right.
of what the organization has decided. So you have to allot that money properly. And if you end up giving too much money to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Bo Bichette, if you don't think he's an adequate shortstop, but you pay him shortstop money and he ends up giving you below average shortstop defense yeah. for the duration of the contract, then that's going to hamstring you for a big chunk of time. And if you pay those two guys too much money and that gives you less dollars to surround them with good players, then you end up seeing what you're seeing right now, which is a team around Bo and Vlad is just not good enough to sustain underwhelming performance from yeah. those two guys.
Can I throw a fake trade to you?
Yeah, hit me.
So, and you know, I'm just saying, I don't mean to pick on Bo because he hasn't been playing well. He has the calf injury, unfortunately. Schneider's saying, was he available today? I believe his one-word answer was maybe. So, I think we're done.
Give him some time. Yeah, I'm finally giving him some time anyways.
Maybe you give him some time. Maybe he gets the whole Red Sox series off. There's a day off on Thursday, and you reevaluate on Friday.
Yeah,
maybe,
it's not like you're missing his bat at this point. Yeah. Like you would, in a perfect world, you are, but
maybe
not right now.
Maybe that's where you are, yeah. right? Just to make sure, because he is still pretty young, and you want to get the most out of him for as long as you possibly can. But if you do believe, and Blair said this before, but if you do believe that Bo is not going to re-sign here long-term, let's just say that he is, maybe that decision's been made. I don't know that it has been necessarily, but let's just say that it has been made and you don't think Bo is a Blue Jay long-term. Then maybe you explore trading Bo and a prospect or two for you know I'm a big fan of Luis Robert Jr. Maybe that's enough to get it done. Not that I willingly wish anyone to be necessarily traded to the Chicago White Sox the way their season has been going this season. It's tough, certainly. But I wonder if, like, with a shortstop free agent market, and it depends on what's happening between now and the end of the year, but with a free agent market of Willy Adames and Ha-Seong Kim, I mean, you could in theory use Bo to upgrade somewhere else, like in the outfield, for example, and still maybe sign an Adames or a Kim to be your, like, defensively minded shortstop that could put a charge into one every now and again. Do I think that happens? Pretty unlikely.
I would think hard about it. I would think hard about it. I think the part of the issue is that Varsho's a pretty darn good outfielder and pretty darn good center fielder.
Luis Robert would have to play, like, right field.
Yeah. I mean,
or left field.
And is that as premium of a position as center field or shortstop, right, for that matter? So are you getting the same amount of value? I just don't think I'd be willing to give up on Bo Bichette yet. To your point, if he decides he doesn't want to sign long term here, then you absolutely have to trade him. You can't just let these guys play out their contracts.
It's the same conversation
and
we had
let them
with
walk
the
away.
It's the same Raptors.
Yeah,
thing.
Like,
yeah.
You cannot get into a Pascal Siakam,
no, Fred
VanVleet type
can't.
Situation
no,
where
right.
you're like, maybe we're going to re-sign them. We're going to continue negotiations. And then you get to the offseason and they're like, all right, I'm going to test free agency. The Yankees are going to offer them $200 million each and off they go. Like, you cannot get in that situation. So you should be doing your due diligence right now. Like, you should have a pretty decent understanding. We know that I think Vlad wants to stay here long term. That's been pretty clear, I think, from his side that he would like to remain a Toronto Blue Jay for as long as he possibly can. I'm not sure that we have the same understanding when it comes to Bo Bichette. So you have to have your finger on the pulse here and see, does he want to stay here long term? And if he doesn't, his performance almost doesn't matter. The only reason his performance would matter is in terms of what you're getting back in return because of his value, right? You have to trade him. I don't even know that you'd get Luis Robert Jr. if everyone knew that Bo wasn't going to
resign.
Right? Because he would only be under contract for another year, essentially. Yeah. And then that's it. So, yeah, I would think long and hard about that if you know for a fact that Bo Bichette doesn't want to be a Toronto Blue Jay long term. But as of right now, I still think he's going to come out of it. And I still think the track record is long enough that he deserves the benefit of the doubt. Give him a few more days here. Let him sit. Let him sort of rethink his approach a little bit and get healthy, and then see what he can do when he gets healthy again. A
couple of quick texts here before we go. Rob from Toronto: Springer needs to watch from the bench. Theo from Toronto: I also agree that it's time that Springer leave the everyday lineup. Could Zach Pop be the guy who steps up in leverage relief if Jimmy Garcia is injured? It's very possible. We've seen some pretty good stuff from Zach Pop recently. Again, I tend to think we've seen, like, the best from Zach Pop. I'm not sure it's going to get, like, even better from him, but I mean, for a Canadian ball player, God, I would love for that to be the case. I would love for them to just rack up all the Canadian guys and continue to pitch very well. But the cutter from Pop has looked phenomenal.
Go
so.
Get the Nailers.
Yeah, hey, that'd be pretty fun. I see. Let's see. Jason from Cape Breton: I'm grateful to enjoy the ball this weekend. Look at the Jays beating the Guardians back to back.
That's
a good
sign.
I see a text here from Paul in Burlington: signed Vladdy and Jano to extensions as soon as possible. David from Dartmouth: there's nothing better than a day at the ballpark than a Father's Day barn burner Blue Jays win. And, of course, we want to thank our dad, certainly. We want to thank Ben's dad, Dan, Caleb's dad, Mark, Jesse's dad, Fred, or Mike, as he's like to be called, and certainly my dad, Naeem. Dad, I know I wouldn't be here without you. I will see you later tonight. Appreciate you guys all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Elmsdale and Port Dufferin, Nova Scotia. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one protection. Jesse, you're the man. This was fun, man.
Show, pleasure and a privilege. Thanks for having me.
That is Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Shao Ali. For Jesse, for Ben Shulman, Caleb Joseph, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Andrew Adams, that does it for us. We're out of here. Blair and Barker back tomorrow for the whole Red Sox series and game one of the Guardians Road Series. I'm back at the studio next weekend. Have a great Sunday, everyone. Happy Father's Day.